Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
The New Statesman.
Hi, I'm Rachel.
I'm Freddie.
And I'm Emma.
You're listening to the New Statesman podcast. On today's episode, we're looking at the government's response to inflation and the transport workers' strike. And you will ask us, Liz Truss's comments about British workers, have they damaged her chances for the Tory leadership? So I'm joined today by Emma Haslett, who is the New Statesman's Associate Business Editor. Hello, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm great.
So could you take us through the latest inflation figures?
Okay, so we had a bit of a shock on Wednesday when inflation, no one had really expected it to really rise as much as it did. It hit 10.1%, which is the first time it's been above 10% since 1980.
And we have the highest inflation in the G7, don't we?
Yeah, lucky us. Yeah, we do.
Bonus prize.
Yeah.
But no one wants.
Exactly. Yes, we do. Higher than anywhere else, really. And that's for a number of reasons, partly to do with our government's energy policy, because places like France have kind of renationalized their energy companies. And that means basically the government's going to absorb energy price rises or partially absorb, which means that their energy, well, energy is not contributing to the inflation quite in the same way that it is over here.
I also want to ask, some of it's driven by food prices, isn't it? Is that right? So yeah. What's going on there?
So basically everything comes down to fuel prices in the end, right? Because to produce food is extremely expensive and it takes an awful lot of energy. So it takes kind of electricity. You've got to put something in your combine harvester and that's fuel. It doesn't help that we've got a massive drought on and that the weather has not been great for farming recently. So that's going to kind of put extra pressures on food prices. But yeah, so there's been a 2.3% increase in the price of food and 2.9% increase in the price of fuel, which obviously pushes up the price of food. In Ukraine, obviously Ukraine is one of the biggest producers of things like wheat, the breadbasket of Europe. And while Russia is kind of now allowing a trickle of ships with grain out, it's never going to be enough to kind of feed the demand that we have.
I also wanted to ask just how much has Brexit kind of contributed to this difference? Because some of it's down to labour costs and labour shortages, isn't it?
Yeah.
And obviously the value of the pound. So we're sort of importing some of our inflation as well. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, the pound's very low. The cost of importing now is going to be a lot more expensive. Some people get very cross when you blame Brexit.
I know, I'm sorry. But if it's a contributing factor.
What's interesting is that the labour market figures came out on Tuesday did show that migration is beginning slowly to return to the UK. In fact, was it Anoush who said that the UK is beginning to fall back in love with migration? The number of migrants coming to the UK is increasing, but most of them are non-EU migrants. And obviously they come with quite complicated visa situations. So it really is a trickle still. But they are beginning to replace those kind of, you know, there was the number of job vacancies actually fell for the first time in ages in the last 3 months. So that's good news, kind of loosely good news for inflation. But it's not enough, really, to push stuff down.
And Freddie, sort of, what has the response of the government been? I mean, I say a government, but we've got kind of a zombie government at the moment, considering we're waiting for a new prime minister.
there hasn't been a massive response at all. I think that's been quite noticeable, both in the Tory party contest, but also from the government at the moment, that inflation isn't one of the key features of the debate. What you've seen from Truss's team is to blame the Bank of England. They say, for instance, that the Bank of England should have foreseen these problems long ago and increased interest rates in advance. Bank of England say, well, we didn't predict a war was going to happen in Europe and there's things outside of our control, such as bottlenecks in China and this surge in the energy prices. So they say that can't be influenced or impacted by interest rates. And then on Sunak's side, he started the campaign talking about inflation a lot. That was his main thing. His message really was, if you have high inflation, it erodes people's livings, and that's the biggest cause of the cost of living crisis. So we need to keep inflation down by having minimal spending or unfunded spending through borrowing. And that's slightly gone out the door. I think they still cling to it a little bit. I think they were quite pleased with a IFS report that came out in the past few days saying that to maintain the government's fiscal rules, they couldn't have these unfunded spending commitments, which they took as a slight dig at Truss's team. But they've become slightly more loose, as I think Sunak has realised that he needs to up his game in attracting Tory members, and his campaign looks ever more imperiled.
Yeah. So, Emma, I want to ask your expert opinion. What do you think of Liz Truss's threat to change the Bank of England's mandate? Could that threaten to make the economic picture worse?
I mean, it's really interesting, isn't it? Because so Gordon Brown made the Bank of England independent in, I'm going to say 1997.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. In 1997.
Cabinet,
yeah. Yes. And generally, that's been regarded as a success because they've managed to keep inflation down. You know, one of the Bank of England's big successes was keeping the outcome of the 2008 crisis as, I mean, it wasn't light at all, but as light as it was, it could have been worse, you know. But this is their biggest challenge to date, I think. And I do think it's funny if a minister, we kind of make fun of ministers, right? You know, one day they're Minister for Education, next minute they're kind of doing farming and fisheries. These people are really experts in their field. Even chancellors, you know, most of them have a finance background, but monetary policy is different to working at Goldman Sachs, like Rishi Sunak has. To change the Bank of England's mandate so that a minister is essentially put in charge of that seems to me quite foolhardy. Like, the point of the Monetary Policy Committee is that you've got a bunch of people around the table who really know their stuff on monetary policy and on keeping inflation low and on running an economy or managing an economy. So to then reverse what has been generally regarded as a fairly successful policy seems foolhardy.
Yeah, I think the main reason that Truss's campaign have done this is they don't want to address the issue, so they've decided to blame the Bank of England. It gives them the freedom to promise more spending, higher tax cuts, and then say, well, actually, it's not our responsibility to keep inflation down, it's the Bank of England's. So as long as they can throw blame on the Bank of England, they can keep promising all these tax cuts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Monetary Policy Committee is a useful, unelected scapegoat, but generally they have proven themselves over and over again as fairly good at their jobs. I mean, there's some things that you can't do much about, and a war in Ukraine pushing up inflation is one of those things. Should they have seen kind of a little bit in advance what was going on? Maybe. Maybe they should have raised interest rates a little bit. While it's the old George Osborne adage of fix the roof while the sun is shining, perhaps they should have thought about that a little bit.
Yeah, just on that as well, I think one of the main criticisms of the Bank of England that's come out recently is the fact that they kept QE, which is the Bank of England's printing money programme, which injects capital into the economy. They kept that going throughout 21, and they're only going to start to reverse that from next month. Mm-hmm. So that does seem like a long time coming. So that's one of the main criticisms, but I don't think gets sufficient attention.
Yeah, it doesn't, you're right. But I would say that, is that enough to kind of remove the independence of the Bank of England? Not sure.
No, it's not at all. But I don't think we can just say they're the only ones that know enough about monetary policy to decide on it. It's a political argument, as you know, it's economics. I think all economics is political. We can't export it or give responsibility for it to some technocrats. You know, they can also be criticised.
Freddie, are you on Liz Truss's side?
No, not at all.
I think it's interesting in the, you know, I wonder sort of in a few months' time when, I don't think it's kind of increasingly not a question of if, but when Liz Truss wins, if this kind of comes back to bite her, if there is a limit to which you can attack experts when the situation is so very serious as it is right now. Right, I wanted to talk sort of briefly about a graph that we carried as our graph of the day yesterday, which showed that Labour now has the lead on the economy and the Conservatives have their lead on the economy with voters has consistently dropped since January 2021. Emma, what do you think's driving that? I don't know how closely you follow what Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves get up to, but do you think they've done a good job?
I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Because if you kind of take a step back from politics, like, the Conservatives are traditionally seen as the party of the economy who know about maths. whereas, you know, Labour is seen as kind of frittering away money. So if for this kind of reversal, there's got to be something quite bad happening in the Tories, isn't there? Like, it's quite shocking. I mean, Keir Starmer's energy policy seems to have gone down very well. Am I right in thinking that?
Including with Conservative voters, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. To be fair, the Conservatives don't seem to have any energy policy. So maybe it's just the fact that Labour have been vocal on what they actually want to do, whereas the Conservatives are just having a massive fight with each other. No one really knows what they want to do. So perhaps it's a kind of, you know, a lack of clarity from the Tories.
I think that's right. I think if you look, for instance, at Labour's energy policy, even though it's been heavily criticised for some of the sums, at least there were sums. There weren't sums with Sunak or Truss's plans. There are speculations about whether or not they'll do handouts, and they've been delaying any decisions on that until one of them gets elected. So perhaps the seriousness that Keir Starmer's address fears about Labour competence over the economy over the past 2 years is coming to the fore now, and I think they are seeing benefits from that.
Do you think Rachel Reeves has had a massive impact? The decline in Conservatives' lead on the economy kind of accelerated after May 2021 when she took over?
Potentially. I think more broadly, you know, members of the public aren't that focused on individual members of the shadow cabinet, but I do think that the focus on trying to come across as more moderate, less radical. I think Ben wrote a great piece this week charting this out, how now the Conservatives are seen as more extreme and Labour is seen as more moderate. It's more of those broad measurements that sort of translate onto economic policy. You know, people saw Corbyn as a radical when it came to economics. They didn't get down so much into the detail of it. It just seemed like too much. And I think addressing that perception has been one of the strengths of Labour's economic policy.
Well, I think we should sort of move on now to look at the transport strikes. We're recording and it's Thursday, so it's the start of another 3 days of disruption because of this ongoing dispute over pay. Emma, do you think support for the strikes is still fairly high, or are there frustrations from businesses now?
I'm not hearing the frustrations that I normally feel like I would. I mean, you'll always get the people on Twitter that are like, for God's sake, and I've got to say, I could really do with being able to get into London tomorrow for a medical appointment. And it turns out that there's no trains going until 10 a.m., so that I'm going to miss my appointment. So, you know, there is frustration, but I think broadly, and maybe it's my little echo chamber, there's definitely that, but broadly, I think there is more sympathy for those on strike than usually there would be.
How much do you think you can put that down to sort of people are used to working from home, so they're kind of, you know, they're more adaptable now?
Yeah, I definitely think that that's a factor. And, you know, when somebody said that there was going to be strikes today, like normally I come into the NS office on a Thursday, I live out all the way out in Kent, I just went, okay, fine, I'll just work from home that day. Obviously, there's a huge number of people who don't work in an office who are massively reliant on public transport. But, you know, even when there were strikes before we all used to work in offices, I do remember just being like, oh, I'll get the bus then. You know, people do find a way around it often. We've just had a massive pandemic where we've watched all these people work and kind of put their lives on the line and put their families on the line. And they haven't had good pay rises. And I think a huge amount, a bigger proportion of the UK population than you'd think are actually quite sympathetic with them.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm picking up as well. So I don't think it's just your echo chamber, but it's interesting that we're not hearing business leaders voicing any frustration at the minute. That's really interesting. Yeah. I wanted to ask Freddie about his fantastic interview with the RMT General Secretary, Mick Lynch. What did you make of his resolve in terms of the strike? Do you think they're willing to stick it out for as long as this takes?
Yes, completely. I mean, he was quite coy about their negotiating position, as you'd expect. He wouldn't go into details about what they're asking. But I think, just linking it back to the inflation figures we've had this week, they're predicting now that inflation is going to stay this high until, or around this high until September 23 at least. So we are going to see greater demands for pay rises across the board. And that, in terms of industrial policy, just means that we're going to get more and more strikes. I don't think this problem is going to go away, whether it's the RMT, nurses, postmen or others.
Hi, it's Anoush here. This is just a reminder that as a podcast listener, you have the option of subscribing to The New Statesman with a very special offer. You can subscribe for just £1 a week. That's 12 weeks for £12 if you go to newstatesman.com/podcast offer. We'll be right back.
From The New Statesman comes a new podcast, Audio Long Reads. the best of our reported features and essays read aloud. Featuring writing from our authors, including Edward Docks on the death of Boris the Clown.
When did the booing start? He was never exactly sure.
A year inside GB News with Stuart McGurk.
One presenter told me that producers had taken to booking their own parents.
May Robson on why women's football is the more beautiful game.
Like most of the England squad, the Euro 2022 captain Leah Williamson can't afford not to have a plan B.
Ease into the weekend with our audio long reads published every Saturday morning. Just search audio long reads from the New Statesman wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now it's time for a section we call
You Ask
You
Us.
You Ask Us.
Great. So we have a question from one of our listeners this week about Liz Truss. Will the leaked recording of Liz Truss saying that British workers needed more graft and lacked the skill and application of foreign rivals like the Chinese damage her chances to be the next prime minister? So this was a leaked recording published in The Guardian. It goes back to her time as chief secretary of the Treasury. And the response of some of her allies has been to say that she was talking about productivity, but she did kind of say that it was about British working culture. Freddie, what do you think?
Well, I think a straight no to whether it's going to harm her chances. I think she's quite, you know, she's doing quite well, and I don't think Tory voters will be that disgruntled with her comments. I think it's a fair point. I mean, ultimately, it was about productivity if you listen to the whole thing, and working culture is about productivity. But it just speaks to the fact that she's unwilling to engage with the real reasons that we've got a productivity crisis in this country, as she is completely unwilling to engage with the underlying inflation that we have. It just speaks to the fact that she is very happy to come out with quite controversial or seemingly blunt sound bites without actually engaging for the real reason that we have a productivity crisis or the real reason that we have inflation.
I think it seems like the conversation was about productivity, but it did feel like a bit of a trope to kind of say, oh, yeah, well, you know, people just need to work a bit harder.
It's quite
don't
basic, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not as sophisticated. Yeah. To just like think of something a bit smarter to say. Like, as Freddie mentions, we have a massive productivity crisis in this country, and we have done since the last financial crisis. And no one's really been able to put their finger on why it is. But, you know, it's things like we have, well, stagnant real wages and have for ages. Now we're having like record falls in real wages, lack of investment in companies and increase in the amount of part-time or temporary work, like the gig economy, essentially, all kinds of stuff. But we work among the longest hours in Europe. People in the UK say there's a lot of things wrong with us, but we're not actually that half-assed. So like, and it really speaks to a very certain group of people who might be the people that are voting in the Tory leadership election. It's a very, very small group of people. The rest of us are slogging our guts out.
Yeah, I think Freddie's right, though. I don't think it will damage her chances when the Conservative Party leadership race. But I think you saw Kit Malthouse come out and kind of double down on it a day later on LBC and kind of say, you know, well, we could all do more, couldn't we? And I think that's kind of tickling the chins of Conservative Party membership,
who
Freddie's exactly right in saying don't necessarily want to engage with the real issues and seem like they'd prefer just the easy answers at the minute.
Yeah, I mean, what it is, it's shifting the blame again away from the government, who's been in power now for 12 years and who has control of our economy and could have, for instance, encouraged more investment, and shifting it onto workers. And I don't think, I mean, it's one of all, as we've spoken about, it's not fair and it's not right. It's just inaccurate. So, I mean, it won't become a scandal because I think it's been quite clear for a long time that Liz Truss takes these positions. But interestingly, I think they might have to change. I was rewatching Kwasi Kwarteng's appearance before the Foreign Select Committee the other day, and he was
nerd alert.
this is an insight into my Thursday evenings. But and he was talking about how his position on China and free trade has changed, and he used to be much more of a free marketeer when it came to free trade, and he would have said, for instance, about the semiconductor plant in South Wales, which he's currently looking at, and whether a Chinese company can take over. In the past, he would have said, yeah, completely, I would have let it go ahead. But now, given the national security concerns we have about semiconductors and the willingness or the desire for the CCP to expand their semiconductor capacity, he's going to take a different look at that. So there is a shift. You know, Kwasi Kwarteng, a key ally of Liz Truss, both of them coming from a very free market libertarian background. Are those views going to be challenged in the next 3 or 4 years as globalization, free trade, Brexit all come to the fore? So just take a small quote from Liz Truss and make it into a big point about ideology.
She's saying this now, and you know the people she needs to vote for her are, I think probably it's fair to say, largely retired, right? They're a very certain group of people. But then if she wins this, she has to stand in a general election, and she's just accused everyone in the UK of being lazy. Like, it's such a short-termist way of approaching this. Like, she's not thinking past the next obstacle.
Yeah, on that note, I'd just like to thank everyone for joining us today. If you've got a question for You Ask Us, email podcasts@newstatesman.co.uk. You've been listening to the New Statesman podcast with me, Rachel Learmouth, and my colleagues Emma Haslett and Freddie Hayward. Our producer has been Mae Robson, and our music is Devil with the Devil, licensed under Creative Commons. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave us a nice review. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Freddie here. I want to tell you about a new way you can support the New Statesman's independent journalism. Every morning I send out Morning Call, our daily newsletter covering everything you need to know about British politics. It's free to sign up, plus for just £3 a month, you'll get a recommended daily piece of ours sent to you in full, plus exclusive polling analysis from Ben Walker, a weekly update from Will Dunn, and our featured piece on Sundays. If you enjoy this podcast, you'll love Morning Call. Head to morningcall.substack.com and subscribe now.